A myślałam, że to nie nastanie. Pachnie tobą kolejne ubranie. Otwieram okno, wietrze myśli. Uśmiecham się słodko, bądźmy bliżsi. Jedynie na zdjęciu, sami w łazience, gdzie nasze ręce, co nie mogą się dotknąć, usta zetknąć, szukają się, czy znajdziesz mnie. Thank you.
much time has passed since I picked up this old piece of wood. I threw on some strings, maybe I'll sing you a tune.
You're listening to 101.5 FM on UMFM. Welcome to U-Talk. I'm your host, Ryan Funk. Monday was Martin Luther King Jr. Day, marking the birthday of the spokesperson for the civil rights movement. His actual birthday was January 15th. In Canada, to commemorate the life and works of Dr. King and the civil rights struggles fought by Black, Indigenous, and peoples of color here in Canada, a Vancouver-based grassroots organization started Black Shirt Day. The organization's name is the Anti-Racism Coalition Vancouver. Let's get into it.
My name is Steve September. I am the chairperson and executive director of the Anti-Racism Coalition of Vancouver out in BC.
What can you tell me about this organization? What does it all do? I mean, obviously it has to do with anti-racism.
Yes, but we deal with the education of people right from the youth in schools right up to universities. And we tailor all of our lectures and discussions, seminars, age appropriate, et cetera, et cetera. So what we really want to do, the main focus is education. And we educate people on the history of racism. People think that racism has been around forever. Well, no, it hasn't. It's basically the inception of racism, actually the doctrine of discovery that came out of the Catholic Church and was imposed on Europe, especially the elite at that time, which is Spain, and actually gave Spain and Queen Isabella the right to go and conquer territories because they were actually broke. When people find this out, that it is a social construct. So we go from the doctrine of discovery to colonialism, British colonialism mainly, but colonialism generally, and how the doctrine was imposed on Indigenous peoples. Now, when we talk about colonialism, we talk about how the Western European went around the world conquering, not trying to collaborate and learn. Now, also, this whole, all these, this information that comes out is not actually just our opinion. We have arm's length worth of bibliography, historical context, people talking the same thing all the time, right across the world. So it's not a personal thing. It's not a made up thing. It is real history in real time. The other thing we don't do really right now is talk about the liberation struggle and the struggle against, because that also shaped the way that the doctrine was implemented, how colonialism was implemented, and continues to be refined. So from colonialism, we go into British imperialism and how it basically, the Britain imperialism died in 1956 with the Suez Canal, and then the U.S. took over after that. Then we also talk about apartheid South Africa, legalized racism. Now, this is anecdotal as well, because I am from South Africa originally. I lived through a lot of that movement from when I was born, so the late 50s, 60s. Was involved in the fight back and the anti-apartheid movement and the pro-liberation movement, especially with the ANC, the African National Congress. And also we talk about after that, the links and how racism is an economic tool to benefit one part of society, which is British and now American imperialism. Apartheid South Africa was established at the exact same time as apartheid Israel, 1947, 1948. And to prove, and we just give you one example, to prove that it was an economic tool, is that the raw diamonds go from South Africa, they go to Tel Aviv to get worked and shaped, and then they go to Antwerp, Belgium, for the international community. So that's just one indication how the tool works. The economic tool works. So we describe this to people, right? But also the main thing is for us to ensure that when I go talk at schools, I mention to the young white kids right away, number one, you are not personally responsible for racism. However, you are personally responsible for educating yourself, understanding how it works through its systems, its governance, its judiciary, all the lawmaking, all the governance bodies, ministries, et cetera, et cetera. And then to find that out is to be able to understand it and then challenge it, because racism only works for a very specific minority. Racism doesn't even work for the black working people. It really doesn't. It only works for the powers that be who want to exploit everybody down the line. And unfortunately, and I have to say it, but these are all old white males. And they keep on recruiting through that line. So you see that they are in isolation to themselves because they treat their women as badly as anybody else. But it's to a degree in terms of negating their rights. And it was shown. When did the women get the vote? Very late. Are they in power in anywhere else? Not often. They're starting to, but, you know, things do change, but change way too slowly. So anyway, this is how we do it. This is how we try and convey the message. And we also try and work with a lot of other groups. For example, the shirt I'm wearing right now says End Racism. That's all it says. And it was made by Decolonial Clothing, which is an indigenous clothing group. Some of the members are from Idle No More. So we're from Idle. So anyway, it is exactly what it is. We are a coalition trying to get people together in the fight back against racism. And the major thing we do is through education, schools, trade unions, churches, community organizations, and we try and convey as much as possible.
It's so important to have movements and coalitions like yourself, like yours, to come together to fight against things, as we're seeing, like coming out of the United States with this whole, like, oh no, like racism isn't real sort of thing. Them trying to, what is that term? Like the
whitewash?
Well, I mean, of course they're whitewashing everything, but specifically it's oh no, why can't I remember the term right now? The term they're throwing around for a while where like, oh no, we're not going to teach kids about the history of slavery in the United States, like the high end education systems like in colleges and stuff. Oh no.
Right, right.
And well, anyways, they're passing that trying to like hide that history, just saying like, oh, people in these movements, these progressive issues, they're trying to make you feel bad because you're white.
Oh, you're okay, sure. Yeah, you're talking about critical race
theory. Critical race theory. There we go. I just couldn't get the name in my head.
Yeah, they want to negate all that because they do not want the truth. Because if people knew the truth, they'd be up in arms. Like, seriously, if they knew how the Ku Klux Klan, how the police forces, how the paramilitary and stuff like that went in and just burnt neighborhoods, burnt cities, hung people left, right, and center, lynching mobs and all kinds of, if that was really to come out and the sickness of it, everybody would be up in arms. Like you don't treat people like that. Anybody, doesn't matter. You don't create enemies from people because of their color of their skin or the area that they live in or the work that they do, or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So critical race theory is vitally important to get out. But we do that. We believe in that, but we don't teach it the same way because in Canada, it's slightly different. Not entirely, because Canada has a horrendous, horrendous history of suppressing Indigenous people. And not in today. The history is going on today. The fight in the Wet'suwet'en community, their own land, not Crown land. But you got the RCMP protecting the company-made, I guess as a paramilitary force, protecting them while they harass Indigenous people on their own land, deny them access to their own land. This is not Crown land. This is their own land. And they're working for the pipelines, right? And you know, oil and fossil fuels are soon to be a dying commodity, soon to be, right? When I say soon, I'm talking about 20, 30 years, 40 years, right? What is going to be flowing? For me, I say to many of the Indigenous people, what will be flowing in those pipelines next is going to be water. And it's going to be water to the States because they've polluted so much. The climate change has changed to the extent where there's drought all the time or absolute floods all the time. And you know, there is no working with nature. There's always working against nature, working extraction. And that's why the Indigenous opinions and the Indigenous caretaking of the land is so vitally important, because they understand that we are one with the land. The land is not there for us to exploit at any cost. And the cost, of course, is money, right? So we learn a lot. Yes, we are an organization that likes to teach, but we also like to learn. And when we learn and we connect all the dots together, we see that, again, it goes back to that minority white supremacists that control the means of power, the means of production. And when people start seeing that, we start seeing a systemic change, an ideological shift. And anti-racism work is just a minor part of that. But it's an important part of that because it shows the roots of evil, I guess. Let's just call it evil. Call it for what it is. Yeah.
Yeah, it's this whole, like, the systemic racism that kind of is rooted in most of Western powers. You know, it makes it and help, like, divides us and keeps those in power. And this like interpersonal racism that is taught to people to continue and uphold that system of power.
Correct. But remember something, that the white minority controls all facets of the society, the judiciary, the police force, the military, many of the ministries, so that when you do come up and have concrete solutions to try and change, they have all their bureaucrats there who take your valuable information and say, oh, this looks good. Yeah, I think we can work on it. And they file it under G for garbage. Because they just, whatever it is, they just piss away. Oh, yeah, we had a person that came through here. And we had an organizer that came through here. They gave us papers and stuff like that. But they didn't follow up. No. Not they didn't follow up. You didn't follow up. Because you do not want change. And it exists all over. And they got their lackeys in their places. They got their bureaucrats in their places. Their yes men who do not want change. Because as soon as it's change, that means that they have to change. That means that they might be out of a job if they change too much. Or if they allow more experienced or people of color, BIPOC, Black, Indigenous, people of color, into their organizations. So what do they do instead? They create EDI, equity, diversity and inclusion, right? Yeah, I called it elimination, diversion, and insults. That's basically what it is, because they do it. It is just a format that can drown and displace people again. Put it this way: if you have an organization and your EDI department is not headed by somebody BIPOC, you have lost it. Because nobody trusts you. And it's the same thing as saying no trust in our system, because our system was based on British colonialism. Well, 56% of Canadians do not want the monarchy. 24% don't give a damn. They can go here or there. 18%. Now, that's a very minority. Actually want the monarchy. What does that tell you? That there is no democracy. If we were to vote tomorrow, they'd say, no, that failed. We have to keep our monarchy. Well, the British monarchy is the number one racist organization in the world. Everywhere they go is death. Everywhere they go is accumulation of wealth. Everywhere you go, there is usurping of powers at be. And they start where I like to do one of my presentation with the four M's. First, they bring in the missionaries to corrupt the people's spiritual beliefs and to create this, we are better than you, our God is better than yours, what you're thinking, et cetera, et cetera. Then they bring in the merchants to totally disrupt, corrupt, and displace all of your own or your indigenous economy. They impose a new political economy. And once they've done that and excluded you from the land and you fight back, well, then they bring in the military. And the fourth M can come in any one of those places there, and that's massacre. And it's proven. Belgium, Congo. Yes, we abhor and we totally against the Nazi occupation of Germany and the slaughtering of not only Jews, but Blacks, Romanis, Gypsies. Is not only Jews that suffered under that, right?
Is everyone that wasn't within their small circle?
That's right. So now we talk. Now they want to hide behind the fact that that was the biggest. Well, it wasn't the biggest. The next biggest was the 10 million people of the Congo and Angola and Namibia. Namibia alone was 10 million people that they annihilated. The Germans. That annihilate. That is like a test ground for how to deal with the Jews, the Romanis, the Gypsies, and the Blacks in Europe. That's a test ground. The biggest of all is on the North American continent. A minimum of 80 million people were slaughtered by various means, political economy. You think that the hunting and the massacre of the bison on all the prairies from the United States straight through is just because they wanted to clear farmland? No, they wanted to destroy the economy and the food source of indigenous people. That is genocide. And it is just a resource. They didn't give a shit about, sorry, language. They didn't give a shit about the bison or the indigenous people. What they did was saw an opportunity for land. And then, of course, the whole issue of slavery. And that's why we also in our organization point out right away. Slavery is not Black history. Slavery happened to black people in certain areas. I should say the slave trade, I should say that, because there was slavery before, happened to black people, and it's not black history. If you want to talk about black history, you have to start as far back as Kemet, which is Egypt, and Sudan, that whole area, and the Kush Empire. That's black history. So today, scientists still cannot figure how they moved, you know, hundreds of tons of rock, clean rock, in Egypt. Well, what about South America? What about the Machu Picchu? What about the pyramids of Central America, Maya, et cetera, et cetera? So this is a negation of history. This is a whitewash of history. This is a restating that we are the power. We will write the history, and you better believe it, because this is how we want you to see it.
Oh, yeah, that's like in all those ancient alien shows where they talk about all these different societies, and they're like, it must be aliens.
Yeah, exactly. You guys, those guys pissed me off to no end, because, you know, again, it could not have been black people of this earth. It would have to be somebody superior to the white people, which means it's aliens.
Yep.
It's ancient aliens. And they run that to, you know, to the nth degree. And the thing is, the conquering of many of the indigenous populations all over the world has destroyed so much science. When Cortez, et cetera, burnt all the books of the Mayans, because it was supposed to be devil's work. You know, how can you the steles and all this work mean anything? It's not written in English, so it must be garbage. It's not written in Europe or Latin, so it must be garbage. So they burnt everything. They burnt science, technology. They burnt higher forms of religion. They burnt agricultural methods. They burnt everything.
Wow. That's some powerful stuff. We'll continue our interview with Steve September, but first, let's take a little break and listen to some music. We've got Anna Arabus is Made to Touch with the song Heart of Stone.
Thank you. know, it's a funny thing, right? Time. It never stops ticking, man. Yeah, black. Out the madness, try to imagine. It don't have to be tragic, doesn't take magic. It's a lake in aspen, or just a fort in aspirin. When it should get erratic, I wish life could be lavish. And love is all we brandish, above all, above average. Only good ish happens, stop doing damage. Arguing semantics, we should just offer answers. How many just offer cancer? Pharmaceutical bonanza, the money pits bananas. Corruption's always rampant, instead of fostering champions. We dreaming of the Hamptons, Forest Hills and Paris. Is this pretty, should I wear it? Only happy when they staring. Pretty people, it's apparent to all the heirs and heiresses, supporters and the nemesis. I propose an exodus, y'all know where the exit is. Slightly to the left of this, it's time for y'all to go. The ugliness is wrong and the goodness is one.
Now, where were we? That's right, we were talking with Steve September from the Anti-Racism Coalition Vancouver about the history of racism and Black Shirt Day. What else were we talking about? Yeah, the contributions of diverse cultures and how if we utilized knowledge from everywhere, we would have a better world for everyone.
Yeah, if we actually took an effort to look at the accomplishments of each other and then build upon those ideas instead of scrapping it and being like, no, 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 it's not our way, so it's the bad way.
Yeah, so that's actually the terror in the mind of the Europeans, and that's why they went with the Doctrine of Discovery, because they themselves had many, many problems, many psychological problems, many problems with disease in Europe, like the plague. Not only one plague, there's many plagues. War, you know, tribalism, et cetera, et cetera. And the only way that they could get out and create more is to steal more land. So for them, it was land in order to do so. And here's a nice quote. And how did they do it? Here's a nice quote from, what's his name? Shashi Ture, right? He says, never in history has one country taken the richest country in the world and in 200 years made it the poorest country in the world. Britain did that to India. And how much have we lost through all those teachings, the Ayurvedic teachings, the teachings of Mahabharata teachings, right? That we just ignored. Same thing. Oh, it's not written in our language. It's written in Sanskrit. Well, we don't know what Sanskrit is, but they do. Sanskrit still exists in many areas, especially Sri Lanka. But it's all covered. It's all hidden. It's all buried. It's all stolen, put into museums. It's stolen out of the lands and put into museums in Europe.
Yeah.
Now, because they feel that the people, oh, we can't give it back because the people there, they don't know how to take care of it and curate it and stuff like that. Are you kidding me? It came from there. They were thousands of years old. Is this the same racist idea as if we are superior because of our even color of our skin or our methods of working, you know? And racism is a construct. It's a social construct. And racism is a tool for economic gain. How did whiteness become whiteness? Well, the British over in North America specifically, you know, in the late 1700s had to co-opt the Irish, who they brutally suppressed, and the Italians. All of a sudden, the Irish and the Italians become white. And where do they go? They go into the judiciary, they go into the police force, they go into city works and provincial works to create a buffer between all BIPOC people and the white minority British. And that is history.
And we're starting to see that right now in the United States, where white passing Asian individuals or white passing Latino individuals are starting to be co-opted within the system.
Right.
And utilize
right.
it as a means to turn on each other.
Now, this was started and perfected actually in India, and they call it colorism. And naturally, the people of southern India, because it's hotter and darker and more sunny, they're darker naturally. You know, and really, there's no black and white. There's all shades of brown, and it's all the result of the amount of melanin in your skin. That's what it is, right? So with that's being the case, you'll see that they co-opt people who have lighter skin, lighter eyes, et cetera, et cetera. That they want now see that. You see? Yeah, we have a bigger extension to this family. Well, they don't. They're just again, misinformation, disinformation, covert activities to mess up the mind. Keep on isolating people. Use every means necessary to isolate people.
Yeah, and there's like the co-opting, like the Nazis had this ideological or this idealized view of like the Greek gods and Greek culture at the time, that they're like, of course, the Aryan people must have come from there, and like the modern Greek person is just kind of like, it's muddled throughout the Mediterranean, just co-opting and changing the story and history of things that they like. But we can have these conversations about racism, and it's important to have these conversations and educate. But one of the big things we're talking about is this weekend is Black Shirt Day, January 13th to 15th. So why don't you tell me a little bit about that and what's all going on?
So our organization started, and some of the people in our organization said, well, okay, so our children, we asked our children what we learn at school. And they say Black History Month. They say slavery. And I said, okay, what else? No, that's all. And we saw, okay, we got a big task ahead of us. Now, Black History Month is very short. It's the shortest month of the year, 28 days. And we figured, okay, we need to have a kickstart to this. So how are we going to do it? Okay, we're going to honor the closest major person. You know, we were thinking about doing Mandela, but that's in July. And all of a sudden, here we go. Dr. Martin Luther King's birthday is on those days, the 15th onwards, right? So, and in the States, they honor that Monday. Well, we said, okay, well, that's the States. Let's do a Canadian thing. Let's do the Friday before, so that kids can wear their black shirts in the schools. And that's how it came about. It came out as a question of unity. Like, we want to unite people, all people of all colors, to fight racism. It's not just black people or not just indigenous. And because we came out with a black shirt as a unity, well, the powers that be, no way. They're going to do everything in their power to ensure that this was not going to happen. You cannot get people together. And a black shirt, we got to find ways to disrupt this. And they tried. But let me say, Black Shirt Day is here to stay. So the Friday before Dr. Martin Luther King, birthday, that's usually on the Monday. So this Monday is going to be the 16th. So we go 13th so that we can kickstart in the schools Black History Month. Now, not only do we just want to do that and say this is a celebration, you know, of Dr. Martin Luther King, we also want to bring forth those speeches which are hidden. You know, I Have a Dream is not his major speech. It's a speech that they hope that the oppressors like the best, because you can dream what you like, buddy. But we're not going to put it into reality. You can dream what you want, whatever you want, and all of God's children, good for you, et cetera, et cetera. But you're not going to talk about changing the system. So Dr. MLK talked about changing the system. And that is why he was shocked.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't about he had a
was
dream.
A massive progressive and radical that
exactly
that history is kind of just completely kind of like muddled down and be like, no. He was just trying to make
people feel
good.
Don't use such nice terms like muddled down. Okay. No, it was whitewashed.
Whitewashed. Okay.
You know, call it what it is. It was whitewashed. It was put in the background. So we want to highlight all those so that people can say, okay, here we go. And it's actually, Black Shirt Day is actually a celebration of people coming together, a unity of people. It is not just that, oh, we're talking about slavery and the oppression of the black people. It's no, because, you know, being from South Africa, you know, the general population of Africa are very, very comedic. You can tell by Trevor Noah. Like that's normal in South Africa, what he's saying, what he goes through. And the reason is because if you didn't find humor in your own life, you'd die from despair. Because racism is an everyday thing for black people. You know, if you're white and living in your ivory towers, it doesn't affect you. You benefit from it. But being black, indigenous, and people of color, it is a daily grind. And it shows in the lack of life expectancy, the type of diseases that the people, you know, generally go through, the type of foods that they're forced to eat, the type of information and education that they're forced to do. You know, it shows all the way through. And that's why it has to be a celebration. It has to be a celebration of light. Has to be a celebration of knowledge, of education, of coming together as the human race and celebrating each other while fighting the racist minority.
What are some racial and social injustices that we're witnessing today that we should be aware of, cognizant of, and that we kind of can unite and fight against?
Microaggressions, things that make people say certain things, white people to black people, that they think it's okay, but it's not okay, right? And then to have the ability to stand up against, and that's what you have to do. And like in South Africa, it took the white minority to stand up to the white minority government in order to start changing things in apartheid. They didn't want it anymore. They didn't want kids gunned down in the schools. The same thing's going to happen in Canada. We don't want to see children ripped out of their homes, you know, Child and Family Welfare Act, et cetera, et cetera. Ripped out of their homes. We don't want to see that. We don't want to see the military being forced upon the Wet'suwet'en people protecting their lands because they water is more important to them than oil. Those are the kind of things we need. We need to be more aware of what's going on. We need to share information. We need to be more proactive in how we learn and teach, and we need to move forward in a coalition-based work because everybody has a role to play.
Yeah, it's all these parts. It's having these conversations. It's for individuals who are white, acknowledging the systems and the privileges that we have and start to deconstruct yourself away from that identity to be like, okay, well, how is this system going? Like, there are people that are being forced out. Like, just small things. When you're mentioning microaggression, my partner, when someone walks up to her and just asks, oh, do you speak English? Just this instant assumption. And she's born and raised here.
It all takes. It takes that all. It takes people to see people together. You know, and that's why apartheid was so effective for such a long time, because it was an isolation of everybody. And now to also prove that apartheid and racism in that sense was a social construct, in the early 60s, Japanese were considered honorary whites. So there you go. How can they be? Because it was an economic link. that they could go anywhere they want. But if you're Chinese or if you're Indonesian or if you're Korean, nope, couldn't go through.
130,000 you had last year for Black Shirt Day. What are some things that you're doing to, you know, beat that number and get even more people involved?
Exactly what we're doing now. Like, we had a few people in Winnipeg that wore their black shirts and, you know, and then posted, keep on posting. We are aware now that more and more people, new people, have come on to our Instagram and our feeds to show that they are in support. Now, Black Shirt Day has not just been a Canadian or BC phenomenon. We have people in San Francisco. We have people in Auckland, New Zealand. We have people in South Africa. We have people in Mexico, people in England, Ireland, Germany, who are doing the same thing. Right?
It's a worldwide
and
movement,
this is what's
right?
so important. It's exactly what it is, because it is a celebration of the life and times of Martin Luther King, but also the teachings of, and how we can expand on that and dig it out and show that it still exists today. It's still as poignant in reality based, as significant today as it was then.
For individuals who are listening to this and maybe it's challenging some of their beliefs, or they're getting educated and they want to learn more, where can they find out more about ARC Vancouver?
Anti-racismcoalition.org. That's our website. If you want to order a shirt or continue order shirts, is blackshirtday.org. Now you can go on our website and you'll see education, you'll see media, and we welcome people to send us videos. We welcome people to invite us to podcasts. We welcome people to take a look at all our stuff. And we believe in iconography, which means that, you know, if I say to you, you know who MLK is, yeah, you can picture it. You know who Kim Kardashian is, yeah, you can picture it. Wow. You don't know who the Canadian Blacks are because there's nothing up about it. So what we have done, we've created posters of many of them, and we want more. We want more leads. You know, we want, Oscar Peterson is up there. Charmaine Hooper is up there. So many, just too many to name. Charlie Roach, the lawyer. Just go take a look at our website. You'll see so much up there, and you can resonate with somebody. So if you're into sports, you can find sports figures. Music figures, you can find music figures. Doctors, you find doctors. Scientists, you find scientists. It's just the accomplishment and the contributions that Black people have made, or BIPOC people have made through. So, for example, Arthur Manuel is up there, right? He's a Indigenous leader. He wrote incredible books. And so is someone like Elijah Harper. He's up there. Tom Jackson, people I knew personally. I worked on Elijah Harper's campaign. Tom Jackson came out and performed in the anti-apartheid movement way back in the late 70s. So this is it's a movement, and a coalition movement as well. We have to get together and keep on moving, keep on finding solutions, keep on making those connections.
And it's only through together that we'll be able to dismantle systems of oppression and build a society where everyone can, you know, live and love.
And that's why a lot of people are doing it. It is out of passion for people. It is out of love for humanity. It's not out of hate for just one group. It's really wanting to move forward and create a better world through love, peace, and working together.
I'm Ryan Funk. This was You Talk. And have yourself a good one.
Reshape my leg of the land so I can leave my kids with some finished plans. sun's up. Hard work and focus, I ain't hoping for no dumb luck. Nothing's tough, I ain't trying to kill nobody's innocence. Guilt straddled the fence, when lacking the evidence, I stay relevant. Everything I live is in the music, on everything that I hate and love. Homie, do not confuse this. More than 2 cents, I'm talking mortgage payments. Family values ain't nothing I'll ever play with. My friendships, they ain't based off making chips. Some say they don't mix, I say I'm practicing good business.
Yeah. Running from honker, frontin', drama, drama, here it come. At me on a chase for 100, every single day is the same old story. When I get paid, give it away, I'm sorry. Bill, 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 call destiny for me. Ah, yeah, I'm screaming out for the mountain for no damn reason. New since a teen, and life ain't easy. Try to change my dream, but the dream ain't dreaming. Try to be seen, but they still don't see me. Way too weird, why the other whole sneak is more to a queen inside that's freaky.
But I think I'ma be alright. So will it change?